Good morning, everyone. Bill Wilson sitting in for Tim House on this sweltering weekend, and we welcome to our microphones our favorite rabbi, Levi Mentz. Rabbi, how are you this morning?
Thank God, Bill. It's great to be together with you. Great to be together with all of our listeners. What a great day. What a great day to schmooze.
Tell us what's going on at that wonderful synagogue of yours.
Well, it's not my synagogue. It's our synagogue.
Right.
It's the great synagogue of North Georgia. The only synagogue in North Georgia, Congregation Beth Israel. And this is such an exciting time. You know, the summer is, we're winding down with this incredible year of 2021, 2022 on the Jewish calendar, 5782. And I got to tell you, Bill, it's been an incredible year. It's been an incredible year. Actually, this weekend, we're having the celebration of all of the participants that finished studying the entire tractate of Talmud, of the tractate of Shabbat. And, I'm just so incredibly filled with joy with all of the participants and what they accomplish. You know, every single day we have a class, every single day at the synagogue at 8:15 p.m., where members join in person or they dial in. And every single day we study two pages of Talmud. Mm-hmm. And it's what a commitment. What a commitment and the knowledge that has been collected over this time. So it's really going to be a great celebration. Very much looking forward to it. We're winding down, you know. We're finishing up the JLIs. But, the Monday night Torah studies class goes on through the entire summer. So, of course, everyone's invited to participate for the Monday night class at 7:30, the Torah studies class, and, of course, the weekly Jewish mysticism, the class on Kabbalah, which is on Saturdays, the last hour before the sun goes down every single Saturday. But here's the energy, Bill. The energy right now is that we're planning for the most incredible year to come. And I can't share what it is,
okay,
but there is a huge, 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 huge development that is going to change in so many ways Jewish life in North Georgia. And we're right now at a phase of contract signing. That's how big it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to share all of this news with you, hopefully maybe next week, maybe the following week. But all I can say is keep your eyes, ears open, because there is something mega, 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 mega going down here at the synagogue, which will translate into something mega for all of us to enjoy. Something massive is coming, and I can't wait to share. Just, stay posted. Stay posted to all of the wonderful, wonderful news. And, of course, this is the greatest time to get involved, to get connected. We're gearing up for an exciting new year. So just get in touch with the synagogue, jewishforsight.org, jewishforsight.org. It's so easy to get in touch, get connected, get on the mailing list, learn about all of the exciting things that are happening. And what's most important, let's be in touch, because when we're in touch, everything is greater and better.
Now, it's time to ask the rabbi.
Rabbi, as children, we were always taught, kind of whimsically, finders, keepers, losers, weepers, but that's not exactly supported in the Torah or in the Bible. Can you explain why that is?
That's a great question, Bill, because that's one of the big differences of biblical law and American law, right? In biblical law, if I find something, I have a perpetual commitment that I have to find the owner. It's called in Hebrew, Hashavas Haveda. Actually, in every single Jewish community, there is a section in the synagogue or in a communal space where anything that is lost, it gets announced to the community. And, Maimonides, he writes very clearly, how long does this last? How long does this last that I have to continue to search out for the rightful owner of that which was lost? And Maimonides writes that based on the verse inside the Torah of we can never ignore lost property, never ignore, right? It says in the book of Deuteronomy that if you see your fellow's ox or sheep straying, do not ignore it, right? Do the same if you find their donkey, garment, or anything else that they have lost, you may not ignore it. Meaning that according to the Torah, to the Bible, If I find something, and it doesn't make a difference what it is, it could be a dollar, it can be a penny, it can be a scarf, it could be a ski cap, it could be a car, it could be a house, it can be a $100 bill. I got to do whatever I can to find a way to return it to its rightful owner. And I wouldn't even be able to be in a position to even use it. It would have to be protected and cared for all the way until I'm able to find the rightful owner. And by the way, the responsibility is on the person who found it. In American law, it's very different, right? In American law, if I find something, I can enjoy it and use it as long as I want until the owner comes along my way and knocks on my door. Now, of course, if the owner knocks on my door and is able to give signs that this is their item, then I would have to give it back. But until that happens, first of all, I don't have to make any announcements. I don't have to tell anyone that I found this really cool scarf. I can just take it home and enjoy it and wear it winter after winter, and it's mine. So why is there such a stark difference? Why is there such a stark difference with the idea of ownership? And, you know, in the world of ownership, generally speaking, there's two different theories of how we understand what it means to own something. There's one line of thinking that says that ownership is really a social construct. And what that means is that we're born in a world. This world was created before we came to the scene. The world is going to be here after we leave. And let's be honest, the trees were here, the metals were here, the waters were here, everything was here. So all of a sudden, I come across and I find my way around these items. Is it mine? Is it inherently mine? One perspective is that it's just a social construct, meaning if we don't allow law to establish that this is yours and this is yours and this is yours and you own this and you own this and you own this, then we would have no economy. The whole idea of an economy is that we have things that we can sell. And by trading, that's how we hope we trade up and we make money. So one perspective comes along and says is that the truth is inherently nothing is ours. The only thing that is ours is our body. Everything else is separate to us. This that I need to own things so that we can have an economy, so therefore there's a social construct that's established by the law. So essentially ownership is defined and dictated and implemented and safeguarded by our court systems, by our laws. It's just a social construct. There's another philosophy, perspective, or theory on ownership that actually was very much advocated by John Locke. John Locke was one of the great English thinkers that actually inspired our Declaration of Independence. And he, on the other hand, says that no, that ownership is not a social construct, that ownership is something that is inherent. And his rationale is as follows. He says, what I have is my body. And what I have with my body is everything that my body does. And my body works, and my body goes out there and takes and develops. And all of the things that I do with my blood, sweat, and tears, with the sweat of my brow, it is through that that I make all of the things that I do become part of me. And according to John Locke, who represented this theory, that ownership is real, that the law protects that reality, doesn't create that reality. The courts protect that reality that I own all of the things that I worked for. They don't create it. They only protect it. And he was of the perspective that every single thing that I own through acquisition or through the sweat of my brow, it's inherent. You can't separate the person from their items. The person and their items are one, and it becomes the responsibility of the courts in order to establish that. And not to establish it, but to recognize that. So you have these two world perspectives. So of course, in breaking down into situations, right, it makes a difference about how we see items that are lost, right? Going back to your original question, Bill. And I know this is a Jewish show, so of course, you know, the big question is going to be, you know, well, what does the Torah say about this? What does the Bible say about that? But let's go one step at a time, right? So if I find something that is lost, if I understand ownership, that it is just a social construct, meaning it's all pretend, it's all make-believe, Okay, so I found something. A day ago, this scarf was in the possession of the other person, so it was the other person's possession to use. But that was all pretend. It was just a social construct. Well, now that they lost it and I'm now finding it, okay, boom, it's a social construct. It becomes mine. But if I understand ownership, that it is inherent, so all of a sudden if I find something on the side of the road, it's inherent to the previous owner. It's their property. And unless I know with certainty that that they gave up hope and that they're not interested in finding it anymore, it's still very much connected to the previous owner's body, very much connected to their possession. And the big question is, what does the Torah think about ownership? And my dear friends, Bill, your question about how do we understand this idea of returning lost items to their original owner gives us such an appreciation based on the mystical and spiritual dimensions and understandings of Judaism to questions that are so much more broader than just finding a lost item. It gives us understanding of being content with what we have, of finding precious every item that has come our way, not coveting something that someone else has. And it really gives us an appreciation to everything and to every person and to every moment of our life. So let's break it down. The Torah teaches us that every single human being is created with a soul. The soul is a divine spark that energizes and animates the individual. With this divine spark, the human being lives. Without this divine spark, the human being dies. Why is it that you see a person with a full body that's fully functioning? And next to this person, you can see another body that has all of the limbs and all of the organs, everything. But for what some reason, the body doesn't work. What's the rationale? What's the thinking? They both have all the limbs. They both have all the organs. They have all the parts and all the pieces. One is talking and vibrant and engaged and can hear and can see, and the fingers can write and the mind can be creative. And the other body is dead because one has a soul and one doesn't. The soul is the spark of God, the animating feature that gives every single human being life. Comes along the inner mystical teachings of Judaism and says that this soul, this vitality that gives life to man, is not only for the human being, but every single thing in this world. In order for it to exist, it also needs a soul. It needs an animating spark. And so therefore, every single animal has a soul too that gives it life. Every single plant has its soul that gives it life. Every single rock in animal has its soul that gives it life. Every single thing in this world, in order for it to exist and not revert back to nothingness, needs a soul, needs a spark of God that is constantly infused and present for it to live. And just like if the soul leaves from the human being, the body decomposes and reverts to nothingness, that's the same thing that happens in all matter. If for at any moment the soul, the spark leaves, then that reverts to nothingness. So what's the walk away from this? The walk away from recognizing that I have within me a soul, a spark, and that everything in this world also has a spark, it leads us to the next idea. And the next idea is that there's a reason why a spark was put into my body. The reason why a spark was put into my body is because I have a unique mission and a unique purpose that I need to accomplish. God needs me. God needs my body. Therefore, God needs the soul to go into the body because this unique soul and this unique body have a unique mission that needs to be fulfilled. And because this unique person has a unique mission, they're going to have a unique soul that will be able to energize this individual person with their unique mission. The same thing is with every creation. Every single animal has its unique mission and has its unique purpose. Therefore, it has a unique soul. Every leaf, every tree has its unique mission, has its unique purpose, therefore it has its unique soul. Even inanimate objects have its unique mission, have its unique purpose. There's nothing in this world that is meaningless. There's nothing in this world that is insignificant. You know, one of the great ideas that Judaism teaches, that it's not only man that has purpose, but everything has purpose. And by the way, this is a huge game changer of the way we look at the world. The moment we start recognizing that it's not only I that have purpose, but the pen on my table, the steering wheel of my car, the key to my house, the lawn, the tree, the pool, every single thing in this world has purpose. So God had intent. I have a big purpose for this world, to make this world a godly and an elevated place. I want a physical world that can come together and merge with the spiritual. I want to create a space where God can come down and live, so to speak, in this world. Well, heaven will come down to earth. This idea that the physical and the spiritual can come together, that the limited and the unlimited can come together, that the mundane and the spiritual can come together, this is wild and awesome. This is exciting. This, the Torah says, is the purpose of creation. And every single creation, man, woman, and child, inanimate, plant life, animal life, human life, we're all part of this big and grand mission. So we're given unique souls to fulfill the unique mission. And this is something that every single one of us and every single creation has to do. Comes along the next idea. And the next idea teaches something that is so unbelievably, incredibly powerful. That not only do I have a personal mission to do alone, but we don't live in a world as individuals that are alone. So much of our purpose asks of us to reach and to use other items, or to connect with other people, or to go to other places. We don't live in a world all alone. Our mission and our purpose is never one that is just, you know, us privately in a universe all alone. But there are specific sparks in specific things that must come together. And together they fulfill the purpose if they're utilized for an elevated and for a godly purpose. Right? Let's break this down. Let's start with human beings. This is the idea of a soulmate. The idea of a soulmate is that I have a soul with its unique mission and purpose. And there's this other individual that also has a soul with its unique mission and purpose. But it's critical in the destiny of our souls, it's critical in the destiny of our purpose that we come together, and we meet, and together we do elevated actions that fulfill the reason why both of our souls were come together. Right? That's why in the idea of soulmates, we both need each other. I need you, you need me. Our souls are craving to come together to fulfill something incredible. But this idea also extends itself to all matter. Meaning, why is it that I need this animal? This animal needs me. We need each other. There's a divine spark in this animal, and there's a divine spark within my soul that we need to come and meet, because there's a divine mission that needs to be accomplished through our relationship and through our connection. Why do I need to come across this tree, this fruit? Why do I need to come across this inanimate object? Because there's a unique mission that both of our souls need. So all of a sudden, when a person takes a step back and asks this one question, why by divine providence have I met these people? Why by divine providence did I come across these objects, these things? Why by divine providence did I come and be exposed to these foods, or to these experiences, or to these places? And the answer, according to Judaism, is because there's a soul radar that is going within our own soul, that is constantly seeking to connect with all of the other sparks and other souls in this world that need to come together to fulfill its divine purpose. You know, I think a great analogy is, think of it like a car. You can have 100 people in a room, and they have all of their cars parked outside. And each of them have a car with wheels, with a steering wheel, with doors, with windows. They all got cars, but they all have their key fob. When they all walk outside that room and they start clicking their key fob, only their car starts to beep. Only their car starts to connect. And that's the same idea with us in this world. When you think about this world, how many things there are. There's so many things, but there's only a limited amount of things that my soul has that soulful connection, and my soulful radar is uniquely looking to process and connect with that item. All of a sudden, what happens is that every single item that I have or any single thing that comes into my space, into my possession, I value it because I realize that what's the real reason why it came into my possession? It's not a bodily function like the theory of John Locke, but it's a soulful connection. Our souls, the sparks of God that's within us, is what's bringing us together. And it is based on this that we need to be together because there's a mission, there's a purpose that only we could accomplish together. And this is the biblical reason why when we find a lost item, we need to return it. The reason why we need to return it is because that person who lost this item, they have a soulful mission with this item, meaning this item is part of their destiny. This item is part of their purpose. And so this item does nothing for me. There's no soulful mission. There's no destiny that I have with this item. There's no destiny that I have with this lost scarf. It's not mine. It's this person's. And this person may look for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years to find that scarf because there's some good deed, some elevated act that that person needs to do with that scarf. And what, they're going to come knock on my door one day and I'm going to say, I don't know where it went. And it was in that item that their entire destiny was standing upon, that they do that good elevated act with that thing. And that's why the Torah says that it's a perpetual commandment. If I find something that's not mine, my entire life I have to find the owner because that person's soul needs it. Same reason why the 10th of the 10 commandments is that we shouldn't covet. The reason why we shouldn't covet is because what's the point of coveting? Everything that's in my soulful reality will come my way. And if it's not coming my way, there's a reason. The reason why it's not coming my way is because I can click that fob over and over and over again. It's not going to engage that car. We're not soulfully connected. And from Judaism's perspective, every interaction with every person we meet, every interaction with every place we go to, every interaction with everything we have is always about destiny. It's always about purpose. It's always about the sparks being revealed, purpose being united, and something that is infinite that is triggered through that experience. And this is the reason why in Judaism, the things that we have, we value so much. The things that we find of others, we find any way to return it because we realize that nothing's by chance. Everything's a divine spark, a purpose waiting to be unleashed. And so your question, Bill, about what is Judaism's understanding about returning a lost item? Its understanding gives us an incredible appreciation, not only to this particular commandment, but it gives us an appreciation to every single moment of our life in its relationship with others, with things, with places. And hopefully this idea can make us walk away with one question. Let's take a step back and let's think about all of the possessions that God has blessed us with. And let's then take a reflection and to meditate on this one idea. Wow, God, you gave me all of these people in my life, all of these things in my life. Clearly, I got this soulful connection with all of these things. Now, what can I do to use the time that I have to engage in those relationships, engage with those things, and to reveal the spark, the soulful connection, to fulfill that purpose, the reason why these things were connected to my soul, to fulfill the reason why all of it was created. And then I bring fulfillment to my soul. I bring fulfillment to the creation of all of those things. And that's a beautiful life. It's a life that's filled with so much meaning, with so much purpose. And all of a sudden, nothing becomes insignificant because now even the small spoon and the small fork that you can buy at the dollar store for $1.25 is connected with my destiny. It's connected with my purpose. And now even something that seems so small and trivial becomes so important.
Well, Rabbi, you have utilized all the time that we have with our audience this week. We thank you for that. We wish you a very happy Father's Day. We want to mention that to all the dads out there. And thank you, Rabbi, for another illuminating half hour this morning on WDUN.
And let's never forget L'chaim to life. Always infuse life into life.
The Shmooze is a weekly show that infuses life into life. To interact with the show or to become a sponsor, reach out at office@jewishforscythe.org.